The Story of Our Health Message, Chapter 15, Lost Confidence Restored. Although the Health Reform Institute had passed a real crisis by 1868, yet there were still grave difficulties confronting its management. The wide publicity that had been given to the initial prosperity of the institution had led to an unwarranted optimism for the future. It was, therefore, somewhat of a shock to the stockholders when, at the third annual meeting, they were told by the auditor that there had been an operating loss of $1,178.68, and that the institution was heavily in debt. The deficit was not only a shock, but also an occasion of surprise to many, for it was common knowledge that the institution had been crowded with patients nearly all the time. The difficulty had arisen from the fact that with the assignment of the dividend by the stockholders to the directors of the establishment, for its charitable uses and purposes, half rates had been offered to needy church members, and the patronage had been largely of this class, giving a patient income of only $8,000 for the year. The full rates were as low as $5 to $7 a week. Elder White exonerated. Elder White had recovered his health so far by now that he consented to take his place as president of the General Conference, as well as to serve actively as a member of the Board of Directors for the Health Reform Institute. A resolution passed by the constituency absolved him from all responsibility for the errors committed in its management, pointing out that because of sickness, he had been unable to have any part in the business. Almost immediately after the close of the annual meeting, Elder White made a statement to the readers of the Review and Herald regarding the health institution. He pointed out the embarrassments that had come to it because of the large number of patients that were cared for at half rates, and also because of those who waited till they were desperately ill before they applied for admission. He emphasized the educational advantages of the institution as being of even greater importance than the treatments designed to recover lost health. One half of the readers of the Review, he said, would do well to spend from 3 weeks to 3 months at the institute. Their money laid out at full prices would pay 50% in the end. The advantages health-wise cannot be estimated in dollars and cents. Come while you can be helped. Do not wait till you are so low as to only be able to reach the institute just alive, to be told, on examination, that there is no help for you. Do not wait till you have eaten all the drugs in town, and have fairly gotten up an apothecary shop in your stomach, and you are nearly ready for the cemetery, before you decide to come to the institute. You do not do the institute justice to put off the matter of recovery till your case becomes doubtful. Come while it is a matter of certainty that you can be helped. There was another serious obstacle to the success of the institution at this time. The suddenly checked plans for enlargement, together with the unhappy experiences that had called forth words of caution and reproof, caused a reaction of feeling among the people. This resulted in nearly a complete withdrawal of the liberal support that had characterized the launching of the enterprise. Elder White's efforts to restore confidence and enthusiasm could not at once change this attitude. By September of 1869, there were only 8 paying patients, and the institution was still burdened with a heavy indebtedness of over $13,000. Light through darkness. So discouraging was the outlook that Elder White was almost ready to urge that the property be sold to pay the debts, and that the balance, if any, be returned to the stockholders in proportion to their investment in stock. But there came a divine interposition before such a drastic step was taken, a move that might well have resulted in the abandonment of an enterprise undertaken in harmony with divine counsel. The turning point came during a period of family worship and is thus related by Mrs. White. One morning, in prayer at the family altar, the Spirit of God came upon him as he was praying for divine guidance in matters pertaining to the Institute, and he exclaimed, while bowed upon his knees, "The Lord will vindicate every word he has spoken through vision relative to the Health Institute, and it will be raised from its low estate and prosper gloriously." Up to this time, the directing board of the institution was made up of ministers, or of men living in Battle Creek, who had very little experience to qualify them for the management of such a work. Elder White labored diligently to rectify this weakness, and following the annual meeting in 1870, the General Conference Committee reported that a board of directors was now chosen, one consisting of efficient businessmen, who have shown their interest in the work by strenuous efforts put forth to correct errors which have too long existed, and to so rearrange the working of the institution as to secure the confidence of the stockholders and of our people, and the approbation and favor of God, an occasion of rejoicing. These brethren had left their homes and business at a busy season, had traveled at their own expense, and had made such arrangements for the future of the institution as to lead Elder White to express his belief that the interests of the institute will be well cared for by them, and that we look upon its future prosperity as a matter of certainty. He urged others to unite with him in prayer that it might enjoy God's favor, and yet become what it was originally designed to be, a place where the sick may receive physical and spiritual benefit, and a means of spreading the true light in regard to the laws of our being, and so aid in the great work of purifying a people to overcome and stand strong in God amid the perils of the last days. A year later, a pleasing program was given on the institution's grounds. Extensive additions had been made to the main building, the cottages had been renovated, and in grateful recognition of the renewed prosperity, it was decided to hold a service of rededication. Printed notices and invitations were mailed to leading residents of the city and vicinity, and on July 21, 1871, about 800 guests arrived. On one side of the grove, in front of the main building, were five tables, each 128 feet in length, the total length being 640 feet. On the other side was a large platform erected with seats arranged in front. Small banners conspicuously displayed bore various mottos, such as, "Nature the best physician, nature's laws are God's laws." Addresses were given, interspersed with appropriate music rendered by the Battle Creek Church Choir, both in the forenoon and the afternoon. From a friendly article, written by the editor of the local newspaper, we copy the menu for the dinner, together with his comments, vegetables, new ripe potatoes, green beans, green corn, beets, squash, green peas, baked beans, bread, cake, etc. Gems, raised bread, hard biscuit, buns, fruit cake, graham, sponge cake, graham, apple pie, graham, oatmeal pudding, manioca pudding with fruit, rice pudding with fruit, fruit, peaches, prunes, dried, figs, dried dates, dried apples, whortleberries, blackberries. It is to be noticed that butter, grease of all kinds, tea, coffee, spice, pepper, ginger, and nutmeg were wholly discarded in the cookery, and were not in use upon the tables. Salt was provided for those who desired it. After the invocation of the divine blessing, the dinner was served in a most capital manner, and was relished and universally commended by the vast company of guests, most of whom for the first time sat at a public dinner got up on the hygienic plan. Divine encouragement. And now once again the Lord graciously indicated his favor by sending a message of encouragement and counsel. It is of interest to note the circumstances under which this third important vision relating to the health reform was given, and its place in the gospel message. In the winter of 1871, Elder and Mrs. White were filling appointments for meetings in the New England states. On Sunday afternoon, December 10th, at Bordeauxville, Vermont, two young men came to the home of Elder A.C. Bordeaux, where Mrs. White was staying, to bid her goodbye. They had been in a backslidden condition, and Mrs. White felt a burden for their salvation. She made an earnest appeal to them to return to the Lord. After a season of prayer, they yielded themselves anew to him. In relating this experience, Elder Bordeaux wrote, "The Spirit of the Lord drew nearer and nearer. Sister White was free, and soon, unexpectedly to all, she was in vision. She remained in this condition 15 minutes. The news spread, and soon the house was crowded. Sinners trembled, believers wept, and backsliders returned to God." In Testimonies, Numbers 21 and 22, which appeared in the year 1872, are found more than 125 pages of instruction which are definitely mentioned as based upon this vision. 1/5 of this material relates to the health reform and the Health Reform Institute. In introducing the subject, she wrote, "December 10, 1871, I was again shown that the health reform is one branch of the great work which is to fit a people for the coming of the Lord. It is as closely connected with the third angel's message as the hand is with the body. Further emphasis on health reform. Further emphasis was placed upon the importance of the health reform as an important part of the gospel message which is to prepare a people for the coming of Christ, to make plain natural law, and urge the obedience of it. Was said to be a work that accompanies the third angel's message, to prepare a people for the coming of the Lord." In the following statement, Mrs. White gave an added reason why physical habits must be corrected before people are prepared to discern and to receive sacred truths. "He, God, designs that the great subject of health reform shall be agitated, and the public mind deeply stirred to investigate, for it is impossible for men and women, with all their sinful, health-destroying, brain-enervating habits, to discern sacred truth, through which they are to be sanctified, refined, elevated, and made fit for the society of heavenly angels in the kingdom of glory. Further specific instruction was given regarding the work of the Health Reform Institute, which had been established to relieve the afflicted, to disseminate light, to awaken the spirit of inquiry, and to advance reform. The differences between this and other health institutions were never to be lost sight of. Most institutions of the kind, wrote Mrs. White, are established upon different principles and are conservative, making it their object to meet the popular class halfway, and to so shape their course that they will receive the greatest patronage and the most money. In contrast to this, she continued, the Health Institute at Battle Creek is established upon firm religious principles. Its conductors acknowledge God as the real proprietor. Physicians and helpers look to him for guidance, and aim to move conscientiously, in his fear. For this reason it stands upon a sure basis. This institution is designed of God to be one of the greatest aids in preparing a people to be perfect before God. In order to attain to this perfection, men and women must have physical and mental strength to appreciate the elevated truths of God's Word, and be brought into a position where they will discern the imperfections in their moral characters. They should be in earnest to reform, that they may have friendship with God. The religion of Christ is not to be placed in the background, and its holy principles laid down to meet the approval of any class, however popular. A message of cheer. There was a ringing note of cheer and encouragement in this message from heaven. There were words of commendation for the liberal supporters of the enterprise and for the sacrifices and exertions that had contributed in raising the Health Institute from its low state in the autumn of 1869 to its present prosperous, hopeful condition. The physicians and some of the helpers went to work earnestly. They worked hard, under great discouragements. Doctors Junley, Chamberlain, and Lamson worked with earnestness and energy, for small pay, to build up this sinking institution. And, thank God, the original debt has been removed, and large additions for the accommodation of patients have been made and paid for. The circulation of the Health Reformer, which lies at the very foundation of the success of the Institute, has been doubled, and it has become a live journal. Confidence in the Institute has been fully restored in the minds of most of our people, and there have been as many patients at the Institute, nearly the year round, as could well be accommodated and properly treated by our physicians. It would be gratifying to be able to record truthfully that by this time the enemy of righteousness had been finally thwarted in his attempts to bring to naught the health reform movement, and that the future success of the health institution and of the journal through which sound health education was to be given was now assured. However, it must be borne in mind that God was calling upon humble men with no former experience to guide them in the great enterprise to which they were called, and there were yet lessons which they must learn in the hard school of adversity and trial. Were it not for the guiding hand of God and the messages which he sent to expose the strategy of the enemy, there would have been certain failure.